Today's date is Thursday, May 8th, 2025. The time is now 9:33 a.m. This is a meeting of the Milwaukee Employees Retirement System Investment Committee. Roll call, please, Jen.
Sure. Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Sorry, Mr. Bell?
Here.
Mr. DeClean?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovac?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Quorum.
Great, and we'll get right to it. We have a five-part agenda here. Item one is to consider, discuss, and potentially approve recommendations regarding public equity investment manager developments. That is marked for closed session, so I read this new, longer closed session.
Tom, I think David has some preparatory remarks he would like to make about that before we go into closed session.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yes, thank you for reminding me.
No, thank you, Mr.
David?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The ERS has several categories of investments and investment managers that manage the fund's investments on our behalf. One of these categories is public equity. Public equity investment managers manage investments that are publicly traded on the stock market. One of our current investment managers has had some organization and investment developments that staff feels are notable and would like to discuss with the committee and then request direction from the committee. These discussions need to be done in closed session for competitive and reputational reasons, so staff is requesting that the committee now convene in closed session to discuss the matter.
Great. Somebody say something?
I'll just say thank you, David. So go ahead, Mr. Klusman.
Thank you, Jerry and David. Please be advised that the investment committee may vote to convene in closed session on item one as provided in section 19.85 sub 1 sub E Edward and section 19.85 sub 1 sub F like Frank, Wisconsin state statutes, to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, and for considering financial, medical, social, or personal histories or disciplinary data of specific persons, preliminary consideration of specific personnel problems, or the investigation of charges against specific persons, except where paragraph B as in boy applies, which, if discussed in public, would be likely to have a substantial adverse effect upon the reputation of any person referred to in such histories or data, or involved in such problems or investigations. The investment committee may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. So do I have a motion to move into closed session?
Hello, motion.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Helling, second.
Thank you, Mr. Helling. Roll call, please, Jen.
Yes, Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Christensen?
Aye.
Mr. DeClean?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Quorum, and if you say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
The time is now 9:37 a.m.
Go ahead.
The time is 10:12 a.m. and we're back in open session regarding item one on the agenda, today's agenda. Do we have a motion?
This is a motion to authorize the chief investment officer to proceed as directed in the closed session.
Thank you, Rudy. Is there a second on that?
I will second.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Any objections? Hearing none, that motion passes, and we move on to item two, which is to consider, discuss, potentially negotiate, and potentially...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Sorry.
Do you have another statement to read?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, sorry, Dan.
It's okay.
Okay, I got to take some getting used to.
Yeah, no, I know.
Thank you.
Don't worry about it, yeah. BlackRock is one of the investment managers that manages some of the ERS's fixed income and public equity investments. Fixed income investment managers manage investments that mostly track the bond market. As mentioned earlier, public equity investment managers manage investments that are publicly traded on the stock market. Staff would like the committee to consider amending the current contract with BlackRock to update certain terms and conditions. For competitive and bargaining reasons, to fully discuss the potential impact of these changes, review the proposed changes, and to obtain direction from the committee, staff requests that the committee convene in closed session to discuss this matter.
Fantastic. Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Then now I'll read my statement. Please be advised that the investment committee may vote to convene in closed session on item 2 as provided in section 19.85 sub 1 sub E as in Edward, Wisconsin State statutes, to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. The investment committee may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Is there a motion to go into closed session on item 2?
This is Conrad.
I'll so move.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. Is there a second? Thank you, Mr. Bell. Roll call, please, Jen.
Yes, Mr. Bell.
Aye.
Mr. Christensen.
Aye.
Mr. DeClean.
Aye.
Ms. Ford.
Aye.
Mr. Helling.
Aye.
Mr. Conrad.
Aye.
Mr. Kovac.
Aye.
Mr. Klusman.
Aye.
Quorum, and please say the time, and I'll pause the recorder.
The time is now 10:20 a.m.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the time is 10:36 a.m. We are back in open session and still on item 2. Is there a motion on item 2?
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to approve the BlackRock Institutional Trust Company in a contract amendment.
Thank you, Deborah. Is there a second?
Justin will second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections? Hearing none, motion is approved. Going on to item 3, approval of the statement of investment policy update. David, you want to handle that for us?
Yeah. Are we ready for open session?
Yeah.
We're open session. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. So what we have here is I'd like to propose three pages that need to be updated in our statement of investment policy. It's really just two pages. One is the cover, it's updated the date. What we're doing here is getting the statement of investment policy caught up with the new targets that were approved as part of the glide path. So again, we increased fixed income from 29% to 32%, decreased stocks from 39% to 36%. We increased absolute return from 7 to 9 and decreased real estate and private equity by 1% each respectively. So what the slide in front of you, what it's doing is we're keeping the minimum and maximum ranges the same. We're just changing the targets to adjust for the new ranges. For public equities, I'm not making these numbers up. These are pro rata. In terms of keeping the same structure, everything just goes down by pro rata of going from 39% to 36%. Fixed income, there was a little bit more thought into it. I think it ended up being close to pro rata if you would have done it that way, but we did keep those close to the spirit of the... We actually break out, for example, core fixed and high yield in cash in the as part of the glide path study analysis. So those numbers were factored into the new passive and core opportunistic. You see the ranges are the same. The other items, real estate, private equity, absolute return, again, they just, ranges are the same. The targets just moved to be consistent. The only other page that changed is the next page. We're proposing that for benchmarking purposes, this benchmark becomes effective July 1st. I mean, this was really approved early kind of, I guess the investment committee was a month ago of the boards, just met at the end of April. They did, again, these aren't completed immediately, and it does a little, just sometimes, I don't think it would be unprecedented, but typically we would implement these on quarter ends as well. So that's why we've proposed July 1st is as good of date as any. Again, I've started to opportunistically move some money from our old targets to getting closer to our new targets. I've been very methodical and pretty deliberate about it. We did add money to fixed income last month, roughly, it might have been about $68 million. We did withdraw from stocks, but we only took it from three international managers, and these were managers that were all had positive returns throughout the month, because international, again, has actually held up relatively a lot better than the U.S. So yeah, we didn't make trades immediately afterwards, so we've benefited from, particularly by not selling any U.S. stocks, from the U.S. Rally that we've had really in the last few weeks. We did set up some trades over the last week, now that stocks have pretty much recovered everything from kind of the April 2nd event. We're making more pro rata. We're using it as an opportunity to make some more pro rata kind of withdrawals from equity managers, both on the U.S., international, and global side. We'll continue to recycle some money into fixed income to get that allocation higher, as well as we're going to be reaching a point in the next couple months where we need to sell investments to pay benefit payments as well, just because of our cash flow net out. We pay out more than we bring in over the course of the year. So it's kind of the story with, I guess, an update from the GlidePath approval, as well as, you know, as I'm taking steps opportunistically to get us to our new targets, I need the safe investment policy to kind of reflect where we're going, and this would do that. Happy to take any questions.
Great, thank you, David. Any questions? Great, it's pretty straightforward. It is an approval item, so is there a motion to approve?
This is Bill, I'll move approval.
Thank you, Bill. Second?
Rudy, yeah, I second.
Okay. Thank you, Rudy. Anyone opposed? Hearing none, the statement of investment policy update is approved. We will then move on to item four. Item four is marked for closed session, but we're going to start an open session, and then Muneer is going to let us know when and if we need to go into closed. And then this time I'll remember to, David, I'll do you have something to read if we do, when we do?
Yes, I do. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, you only got to beat me twice, so then I got it now. Great, and Muneer, are you out there? And thank you for sitting through so much and being patient with us.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be with you all. Good morning.
Thank you. You have the floor then. Go ahead.
Thank you. Great. It's great to be with you all. So we'll be talking about the Q4 real estate performance. So we can start on this page. Just as a reminder, the portfolio is well positioned, well diversified. Over the past 5+ years, we've largely transitioned away from the non-core portfolio. We've managed that wind down, and now we're about 98% is the core portfolio. In addition to that, we had success in allocating to a new manager. And then lastly, the five-year performance continues to outperform, which is in line with the target. So I just want to start there before I got into the market and then a little bit more detailed in performance. So as we talk about the real estate market.
Oh, just one here. If you could tell us what slides you're on, we would just want to make sure we're sharing the slides that you're speaking to with the group. So.
I'm in four at this point.
Sure.
Okay, cool, thanks.
Yeah, four is great to start, and I was just giving some high level before we even got into the deck itself. But yes, four is a great place to start. I want to just kind of table set with kind of the position and achievements of the portfolio. So with respect to the market, what we've seen is that after seven quarters of negative returns, we've now seen two consecutive quarters of positive returns. Fourth quarter, we saw the Odyssey benchmark, which comprises 25 core real estate funds, of which we invested in three, was positive. All participants within the index were positive. So that's a good sign that there appears to be a bottoming of valuations. And on top of that, there's been positive appreciation. So the actual value of the real estate assets are increasing in value. The other index that we have there is a property level index. This and performance there is because there's leverage in the Odyssey and there isn't in the property index. So it amplifies returns going up. And when returns are negative, it does the same thing on the downside. So that's the main difference between the two there. And another thing that I add is that, you know, office continues to be the laggard, but to a lesser degree. But we're seeing slightly positive appreciation across the other three main property types of retail and warehouses and residential. So on the next slide, we'll see some of the fundamentals. And, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past few times, but because of the rise in costs and rapid rise in interest rates, what's that done has muted the supply pipeline. So labor costs are expensive, financing is expensive, and so are materials. So what that has done is there has been quite a bit of decrease in new supply and development. It's more affordable to buy existing assets than to create new assets. But what's happening is that there was a lot of that new supply was built in 2020 through 2022, but that supply pipeline is off. So we're still seeing the impact of increased supply, which is softening rents, but there's no new supplies coming online. So we expect that supply-demand balance out towards the early 2026 or middle of 2026. So in the interim, maybe some softness of rents, but broadly speaking, these are strong fundamentals for multifamily and industrial. Retail has been steady, no supply, but it's kind of steady, predictable yields. Office, separate, it'll take time for that to fully be sorted out. There hasn't been that many, buying and selling of the larger assets, over 200 million. But there's still softness in office, and that'll take time even as we're through this kind of supply-demand equilibrium. Office will continue to be somewhat of a laggard because we're still dealing with the impacts of working from home. Though many of the tech companies are having employees come in more in the office, and in some cases full-time. And then similarly, so we see that vacancy by property type. Similarly, because of the increased supply, slight increase in the vacancies, but given the limited supply coming online, we expect that to moderate and kind of see the strengthening of fundamentals again in middle of 2026. The one thing I'd add is that, you know, we didn't have commentary on tariffs because, you know, since April 2nd, there's been a lot of kind of volatility in the policy rollout. There's lots of headlines about occurring in the ports, but what I'd say with respect to industrial is that because of those supply-demand drivers there, it is well positioned at least on the demand side, or sorry, the supply side. But the demand side still is robust, but that could potentially be issues, but I don't want to prognosticate and I'm not a policy expert here. What I would say, and I'll touch on this later as we talk about your existing portfolio, is that it is well diversified. There was an overweight to industrial. We brought that down with the new allocation to a manager and rebalancing the portfolio. And I'd add that there are still really strong fundamentals within industrial. That's something we're monitoring we haven't seen that occurring in the data just yet. It's something we're aware of, but still kind of too early to make any, you know, prognostication or see any impacts of the real data. On the next slide, we can see the impacts of transaction volume. And the good news is that we are seeing increase in transaction volume, not the peak that we saw in 2022, but transactions are increasing year over year and quarter over quarter. And that's due to a few things. One, there's more kind of alignment on pricing. In addition, there's more capital available, whether that's from banks and lenders. So that's a good part of the equation there. And so it's increased transactions in industrial and multifamily. So that's a good trend that kind of follows the trend of certainty on pricing, which is giving more confidence in valuations. And that's why we're starting to see some of the positive appreciation here. And then with that, we can go to the next slide, just kind of a refresher on the portfolio objectives here. Thank you. And, you know, we continue to see the benefits of real estate, giving that enhanced diversification, lower volatility. And the good thing is that over the year, we finally saw absolute outperformance. The portfolio's been outperforming over multiple time periods, but the negative returns. But now we're starting to see positive absolute performance, which is great to see. And it continues to exceed the benchmark target by 200 basis points, slightly above 200 basis points over the five-year number, and we'll see more of that later on in this discussion. And the last thing, you know, the prior month, there was the new target to real estate came down 1%, so from 9.7 to 8.7, similarly with the real assets range, 9 to 15%. And we'll see on the next slide that we are already in line with that. So on the next slide, we can see kind of the existing portfolio at just under $484 million, and that is about, or $483 rather, and that's just above 8.2% of the real assets target. So in line there with the new target already. We'll continue to monitor alongside with staff. When you include the diversified real assets portfolio, you're still in that allowable range of 11.3%. And then when you factor in the unfunded commitments and the redemptions, that takes you to just under $484 million, so still at that 8.2%. And then the other thing I point out is the balance between the core funds. Those are stable, income-producing, well-leased assets in strong and healthy markets versus the non-core portfolio. That's the higher up the risk spectrum, which now only comprises of just under 2% of the portfolio. So continue to make lots of good progress on focusing on the true focus of the real estate portfolio as the non-core continues to become a smaller proportion of it. So on the next slide, we can see the breakout between the individual funds here. So the most newest acquisition in 2024 or implementation was Harrison Street, the alternatives focused strategy. And the benefit of that is to further diversify the portfolio, either from an allocation perspective, but also from a manager perspective. And then you can see the 2% to non-core funds will continue to come down. The bulk of that is in one fund. So we're getting closer and closer there. But many of them are prolonged due to kind of various legal issues. But the portfolio is well positioned and continues to diversify the core holdings there. On the next slide, we can see the portfolio allocations. And you know, the benefit here is that we continue to see increased diversification. About 3 years ago, because of the strength when you're industrial focused managers, that industrial was nearly about 50%. So count along with staff, rebalance that in order to have a kind of more diversified portfolio. And on top of that, your existing managers have been underweight to traditional office, which has also been a benefit. So you're underweight to the more challenged sectors and leaning into the well-positioned sectors. And that was also part of the search that was done that resulted in Harrison Street. And Harrison Street is a strategy that focuses on non-economic linked cycles, more of a demographic play. And so that'll only increase the alternatives focus of the portfolio. And on the bottom, we break out the office holding just to see how that looks in the non-core versus core portfolio. But office will continue to come down because of the continued allocation to Harrison Street, the fact that your existing managers are increasing allocation to multifamily industrial in the alternative sector. And also, they'll continue to shrink because of the softness within office as well. And then we can see how this translates into performance on the subsequent slide. So the target being to outperform the Valuate Odyssey benchmark, that's a core real estate benchmark over the five-year term. That's been success over all time periods. And over the 5 years, it's over 200 basis points of outperformance. And then the good thing that I highlighted as well is that the 1 year has outperformed as well, but now we're starting to see some capital appreciation, actual growth, so absolute performance as we've, it appears that we've largely bottomed from a values perspective. So those are good signs, and there's still going to be lots of healthy tailwinds within real assets. And on the next slide, we break out between the core portfolio and then the non-core portfolio. What I'd remind you all is that that non-core portfolio is now about 2% of the existing holdings, while the core is 98%. So you can see the outperformance of the core holdings against the benchmark. And then the non-core portfolio, you know, when you're taking more risk, you're taking the liquidity risk, it's higher the risk spectrum, expect to be rewarded for that risk, and that hasn't been the case. But that's also been why there's been kind of the focus to de-risk and focus more on core real estate, and that has benefited the portfolio. And then we can just pause there with any questions before kind of getting into the summaries and what we're monitoring.
Good. Any questions?
Great. Okay. So on the next slide, you can see kind of what we're focused on. So kind of the summary being that the real estate portfolio is giving you what is expected with that performance versus the benchmark. We continue to see the allocations are benefiting the portfolio, or overweight the sectors in which there's tailwinds and underweight the ones that are struggling. So office, while being increasing allocation to alternatives, the portfolio is continuing to be rebalanced as we paced in the commitment to Harrison Street. So that was done along with staff because of the uncertainty and volatility in the market in 2024. The focus was to pace in the commitment because of the uncertainty in values, and I think that's been a prudent and well-designed decision. And I'll continue to increase allocation to the alternative sectors such as self-storage, seniors housing, medical office, and student housing. And the other thing is that the broader portfolio is in line with the new real estate target, and we'll continue to monitor alongside staff. So the recommendations is continue to fund the commitment, original commitment to Harrison Street. It is to monitor J.P. Morgan's Strategic Property Fund and the pace of redemption payments. And then lastly is to monitor and rebalance, if necessary, to that new real estate target. And then with that, we We do have a slide, just kind of an update on JP Morgan Strategic Property Fund. That was the strategy in which we recommended and board approved to enter their free credit program.
Munir, make sure, I'm not sure if this is, just make sure you tell our chairman when it's time to go into closed session, so.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of be the lead in before.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sorry. You can, yeah.
Sure, but yeah, that was all my lead in, so I'll let you take it from there.
Okay. Do you want to go in now? Do you need to close?
Yeah, it'll be quick, but just to give some updates, I think.
Okay, very good. David, you want to read your thing?
Sure. In the open session portion of this presentation, Callan has discussed ERS's real estate allocation. We now need to request that the committee go into closed session to further expand into the details of certain aspects of the real estate investments that cannot be discussed in open session for competitive and reputational reasons.
Excellent. And then I'll read, please be advised that the investment committee may vote to convene in closed session on item 4 as provided in section 19.85 sub 1 sub E Edward and section 19.85 sub 1 sub F Frank Wisconsin State Statutes to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, and for considering financial, medical, social, or personal histories or disciplinary data of specific persons, preliminary consideration of specific personnel problems, or the investigation of charges against specific persons, except where paragraph B as in boy applies, which, if discussed in public, would be likely to have a substantial adverse effect upon the reputation of any person referred to in such histories or data, or involved in such problems or investigations. The investment committee may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. So is there a motion to move into closed session on this matter?
Helling motion.
Bell motion.
Thank you, Mr. Helling, and a second from Mr. Bell. Any roll call, please, Jen?
Yes, Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Christensen?
Aye.
Mr. DeClean?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Kolbeck?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Quorum and the time, please, and I'll pause the recorder.
So 11:01 a.m.?
Time. Go ahead.
The time is 11:16 a.m. Maybe is it appropriate to take a five-minute, we're back in open session. Is it appropriate to take a five-minute break before we go into the performance update?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's take a quick five because the performance update, even though it's just the one item and it's last, it's still important. A lot of work goes into the performance, so I want to give Eric as much time as he needs and not a fatigued audience. So it's 11:16. Let's be back at 11:21:23, and we're back in open session for item number 4, which is the Seamers first quarter 2025 performance update. Eric, you want to take that for us?
Sure. I'll start out. I'm going to give an overview of total fund performance. I'm actually going to, I'll turn it over to Keith and he'll cover public equity, fixed income, and absolute return. I'll close us out with the performance update. So yeah, we can start on going number 3 now. So just looking at the market environment during the first quarter, stocks were down a bit, down 1.6%. Fixed income was up 2.8%. Real assets was up 1.9%. Private equity, and again, we've discussed how we benchmark that in multiple times in the past. That led to a benchmark return of 3.0%, and then our absolute return benchmark was up 1.8%. which led to an overall CMERS benchmark return of 0.9%. We can go to slide four now. So, you know, looking at our style biases that we have built in, value went in our favor in terms of relative performance. So Russell 3000 value only down 2.9, held up a lot better than the Russell 3000 growth, which was down 8.4. Then the other biases went against us, but you know, not huge. So small cap down 6.8 versus large was down 5.8. Fixed income credit with Loomis only up 2.3 versus 2.8 for the ag. Again, not a huge amount of underperformance there. And then our private equity, and you know, as we note in the footnote, we don't get statements during this time period, so that negative 0.1% really just represents fees that were taken out of capital calls. But just comparing that to the benchmark of 3.0, again, not huge underperformance compared to some of, you know, what we talked about last year when comparing to that benchmark of the public market plus a premium. So what's not on here, because you know, it's not really a permanent style bias that we have in the portfolio, is the international bias, but as we'll see in a few slides, that also went in our favor. So that means we outperformed. So we were up 1.2% versus 0.9 for the benchmark. We can go to the next slide then, Terry. So just looking at total fund performance, you know, outperformed in the quarter, underperforming over the 1 and 3 year periods, but nice outperformance against the benchmark longer term. So you can see that show up in the, you know, the rolling excess returns or the investment growth charts. Go to the next slide. Yeah, so just looking at attribution, you know, really, you know, fairly simple, straightforward this quarter. I mean, really nice benefit from style bias. So that was, as I said, international and value. So, I mean, you would remember from our kind of monthly updates at the board meeting, you know, the updates of Brandis and DFA International and how well they were doing. You know, so you see that come through in the international style bias, and then again, value as well. Private equity, again, the way we benchmark that with, you know, comparing that to the lagged public market plus a premium, comparing that to, you know, essentially a zero minus some fees, that detracted 40 basis points. So that's really the two big drivers of relative performance. We can, you know, the next slide, I mean, this is just, you know, if you like to see it month by month, kind of a graphical representation of the various categories. Again, you see the, you know, not as much in January and February, and then March, we kind of had some bigger moves there. Next slide. Looking at our performance versus the universe. For the quarter, really just above median, so right at 48%. You know, the 1 year and the 3 year, as we mentioned, you know, underperforming over the 1 year. But if you look at how our benchmark ranks in the universe, so just to drive home the point that's a really difficult benchmark to outperform when the private equity benchmark is doing what it was doing. But you know, just a little underperformance there. 3 years, just slightly below median, so really not terrible. And then longer term, you know, really strong 5 year number compared to our peers. And then 7 and 10, you know, just below that first quartile. So, you know, really happy with the longer term numbers. So that's. We can go to slide 16. I mean, unless anyone has any questions about the rest of the total fund slides, I can turn it over to Keith to talk about public equity.
Thanks, Right. Hearing no questions, thanks, Eric. Just looking at the public equity portfolio's performance, a really solid quarter relative to the benchmark, with the fund up 0.3% net, net of fees, and the benchmark returning minus 1.6%. Looking over the annualized return periods, the fund is below in the one-year period, but is meeting or exceeding the benchmark in all of the longer-term periods. And as Eric noted on the total fund slides, you know, looking at the rolling excess returns chart in the bottom bottom right-hand corner of the page there, still demonstrating good excess returns on the public equity side. Go to slide 18. A similar story here to the previous slide with respect to the peer group. Really strong performance in the first first quarter, fund ranking in the top quartile. And really, if you look across all periods, the fund is easily within the top half of the peer group, with the exception of the one-year period. Very notable also is the five-year period, again ranking in the top quartile. And when you look at that relative to where the index has fallen, I'd say we have there's a lot to be happy about on this slide. If you want to go to the
That slide stood out to me. I mean, how many times have we said over the last few years that things are not working out in our favor in public equities, and then you just look at these last two slides and I mean, things can turn quickly, and I mean, that's for a three-month period for us to outperform like that in one quarter, and to put it all in perspective. Yeah, I mean, it's our patient approach. We're not trying to time the market. We're just trying to set a direction and be patient with it. And fortunately, our patience was rewarded, right? So.
No, that's fine. We'll go to slide 19. Just a few things to note. With this slide relative to the previous quarter, the upper left-hand graph, our weightings and financials did increase by 1.3% from the previous quarter. Information technology exposure decreased by 2.1% from the previous quarter. And probably not much of a surprise to see a move like this, just given how, as Eric mentioned earlier, value performed relative to growth. I mean, financials do make up a large part of the value index. Information technology makes up a large part of the growth index. So not too much of a surprise to see that change. The same could be said with the middle chart there, just with respect to our weighting in North America versus our weightings in European developed markets. We looked at the previous quarter, our North American exposure decreased by 1.7%, Europe increased by 1.3%, and again, probably a function of just how the markets performed over the quarter. As far as the top 10 holdings go, let's see, TSMC moved into the third largest position. I believe replacing NVIDIA there, so those two stocks swapped as far as their rating goes, or as far as their weighting goes, excuse me. And then new to the top 10 is Tencent Holdings, which is the ninth largest holding there, and that replaced Accenture from the previous quarter. Not too much change with respect to the top 10 managers. BlackRock, Russell 1000 Value did move into the top five, swapping spots with Northern Trust S&P 500 Index Fund, potentially a function of Value's performance during the quarter. But those are semi-notable changes that I felt worth mentioning on this slide. If you want to go to slide 20, not really much changes with this slide, just given that all of the measures are calculated over very over longer-term time periods. I mean, one minor thing that I saw from the previous quarter is that our down capture did move in a little bit, which is a good thing. But otherwise, things were fairly consistent on this slide. So we go to slide 21. And again, from a valuation characteristics perspective, I mean, I think the big takeaway from this slide is that top chart that you see there with respect to price earnings, price to book, price to free cash flow, dividend yield, and how those all look respective to the benchmark. As we've alluded to several times, you know, we do have a value-oriented portfolio, and those measures you would typically want to see below what the benchmark has from a value, or what the benchmark presents from a valuation perspective. With the exception of dividend yield, typically you'd want to see that measure being a little bit higher. So to me, that just says, you know, with respect to our public equity portfolio, from a statistics and characteristics standpoint, it looks as it should. And if we want to go to the next slide. And these are just, you know, relative value measures. I mean, not really anything. I guess one thing to note in the bottom left-hand corner, and Eric alluded to this in the beginning of the presentation with respect to you know, the PE of Russell 3000 value versus Russell 3000 growth. If you look at the yellow line there, there's a pretty steep drop-off as multiples have compressed within the growth space here over the past 3 months. But otherwise, I mean, I think things look as they should on this slide. No real surprises here. So we're going to go to the next slide. So from a individual manager performance perspective, we see DFA International, Brandis, and BlackRock Global Alpha Tilts all outperforming during the quarter. With respect to DFA International, a lot of the performance there could be attributed to the value factor that portfolio possesses. A lot of that performance could possibly be coming from the exposure to international banks, which had a very strong quarter that was contributing to attribution. As far as Brandis goes, their performance can be attributed to strong stock selection within consumer discretionary and healthcare. In addition, they had an overweight to the consumer staple sector, which outperformed during the quarter. Want to go to the next slide. More underperforming managers than outperforming managers during the quarter. With the exception of Blair, I wouldn't say any of the underperformance is cause for alarm. With respect to Blair, a lot of their performance was impacted from their stock selection within consumer discretionary and financials, as well as their both their positioning and stock selection within information technology. With respect to MFS, a lot of that underperformance was driven by stock selection within industrials and healthcare. They also had an underweight position within energy, which impacted performance. Just want to go to next slide. And these are just, you know, our index and real assets manager. You know, with the index funds, I mean, you can sort of see how they're tracking their benchmark closely, and that's what you want to see there from an underperformance and an outperformance perspective. And then with respect to principal, a lot of the performance there comes from an overall defensive positioning in their portfolio, which caused them to trail the benchmark over the past quarter. Do you want to go to the next slide? And the next slide after that. Okay, moving on to fixed income. The fixed income portfolio, net of fees, underperformed the Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Index. The index returned 2.8%. The portfolio returned 2.7%. Still, though, across time periods, some good, consistent outperformance over the longer term there. And again, looking at the bottom right, rolling excess returns, getting some really good performance from our fixed income managers. We can go to the next slide. Similar story here from a peer group comparison perspective. We did modestly fall below the benchmark from a peer group perspective rating, coming in at the 44th percentile. The benchmark was at the 41st percentile. Again, looking across the longer term periods, with the exception of the 7-year period, and even then we still ranked above the benchmark. Really good, consistent top half performance with the 5-year period ranking comfortably in the top quartile. So if we want to go to the next slide, with respect to manager performance, during the quarter, Loomis underperformed, Reams outperformed. Not too much of a surprise to see this. As Eric mentioned earlier, with Loomis and their exposure to credit and to the degree in which spreads widened over the first part of the year, not too surprising to see them underperforming the benchmark. But relatively speaking, they held in pretty well, only underperforming by 0.5%. Reams actually outperformed. A lot of this was due to their duration positioning within the portfolio. They had started the year a bit longer duration than the benchmark. As yields came in, that duration positioning helped them outperform. They since had gone to a neutral weighting in position, or a neutral weighting in their duration positioning, and that's really benefited them well through the first part of the year here. And then with respect to BlackRock, again, that's an index fund. We just want to see that tracking the index closely, and that's what it's doing. So we're going to go to the next slide. Not much to talk about on this slide. Really no material changes from the previous quarter. So we can just move on to the next slide after this. And then with respect to absolute return, I don't want to call it a mixed bag with respect to how our managers performed, because both of them were able to generate positive performance over the quarter. You can see where Aptitude did underperform the benchmark by 1.5%. UBS outperformed by 0.1%. UBS really, across the board, as far as their underlying managers go, really posted some solid performance over the first three quarters. And then with Aptitude, I would say a lot of their managers, it really one or two stuck out over the previous month or two from a performance perspective that I think's caused it to underperform the benchmark a little bit. But I didn't really find anything to be, too alarming in the reports that they had sent to us. So we'll just consider or continue to monitor, their performance here over the coming quarters, just to see how, over the long term, that portfolio develops. But still, some good, given what we experienced over the first quarter, just in terms of market volatility. The fact that both of these managers were able to post positive returns, I found to be encouraging. And if we want to go to the performance update, I'll hand it back to Eric if there are any questions on what I went through there.
All right. So the fund through yesterday, estimated market value was $6.02 billion. Believe it or not, we were estimated to have a positive return in April. I mean, I just got back from the CFA conference, and I think, one of the speakers said something like, if you went to sleep at the beginning of April and woke up at the end, you'd think nothing happened. But actually, as you lived through it, it was one of the longest months of your life. obviously what I'm talking about is the April 2nd, Liberation Day, tariff announcements caused the market to drop. Ended up getting most of that back as kind of some of those were walked back, or just the day-to-day developments. So we ended up, again, early estimates, the fund was up 0.2% with a lot of volatility throughout the month against a benchmark of up 0.5, roughly even with the benchmark month-to-date through May 7th, so 0.4 versus 0.4, which brings the year-to-date return to 1.8 versus 1.9 for the benchmark. Again, you know, a lot better than what we were looking at just a few weeks ago. So, you know, we'll hope it holds up. But there's a lot of uncertainty out there right now. And unfortunately, you know, the market doesn't like uncertainty. So certainly could be more volatility ahead. But yeah, any questions? Happy to take them. Otherwise, that concludes the performance update.
Thank you, Eric and Keith. Any questions? Fantastic. Excellent report. And that would wrap
Mr.
up.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure. Is that Rudy?
Yeah, I just want to say this little month of April here, we learned how fragile some of these things are. Kind of scary.
It's an interesting takeaway that, like you said, Eric, that it ended the way it began, but it was the longest month of your life if you were awake.
Yeah, that one stuck with me.
Yeah, I mean, it's all true. I mean, it's, I mean, again, we're not, I mean, I think, I mean, we talked about this, or I think I mentioned this maybe when we were going over the fourth quarter report 3 months ago, but diversification didn't really help investors really break the line into 2022, 2023, 2024. I mean, yeah, when there's this much uncertainty and fragileness like you're referring to, Rudy, I mean, really the only way you can't insulate yourself completely from this, but really the best you can do is diversify. And I mean, I think that what that market slide that Eric, I think, was one of the first slides he showed, right? And all of our asset class benchmarks were positive in the Q1 except for the stock one, right? And it just so happened that, as Keith showed you, we actually outperformed so much in that I think we had a positive return in that asset class. So I mean, it's just one data point. I mean, April, there were certainly points in time when it was uncomfortable to see the value and the returns going down, but the diversification that we have helps us prepare to navigate these environments better than funds that have much more in equities, for example, and probably showed higher returns the last couple of years, but would have been more challenged to start this year.
And I think I saw something that said, I think personally, as we look back on it, the less said about the month of April, the better. But, diversification, I think, is one. And if you look back at the past 20 years, 7 of the 10 best days in the market have come within 2 weeks of the worst 10 days. And so not only is diversification important, but staying invested and not panicking is important as well.
That's
a good point. Yeah.
Right. That's interesting.
Yes. Excellent point. All right, anything else for anyone? Great. That wraps up item 5, and 5 is all we had, was 5. So we'd accept a motion to adjourn if someone wants to make it.
I will make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Justin will second.
Thank you, Justin. Anyone opposed? Hearing none, we stand adjourned, and the time is 11:49 a.m. Thank you, everyone.